This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin and Ryan Kennedy here. We're back from our vacation from Ken Campbell. I mean, sorry. Ken Campbell took a vacation from us. He's with us here, too, as well, back from the Dominican Republic, or as Edward called it last week on the podcast, the Dominion. I don't know why I said that. How's it going, Kenny boy?
It's going great. So we did a shout-out last week, right, to these people that got married, friends, the son of a friend of mine, Andrew Whitson, and his wife, Julie. And it got me thinking, you know, this could be a revenue-generating opportunity. I really think it can. I think we should, right now, like, let's figure it out.
Like, this is a commercial. Is a commercial happening right now?
So, if you want a shout-out for your bar mitzvah, like wedding, you know, funeral, whatever.
Graduation,
anything, just send, you know, $50 cash. I guess, you know, the Hockey News. It's probably best if they just send it to me.
Carol, like,
just,
Campbell.
Yeah, let's just, just for expediency's sake.
Sure,
so they send it to me, and we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. I think that's pretty solid.
That's money in the bank.
Now let's go to the phones.
Yes. All right. The podcast will be three times as long.
I heard you guys were kind of dissing me a little bit there last week on the podcast, saying how it was
a little bit,
how you were so happy I wasn't here and everything like that. And then in the power rankings, you said Ken Campbell's on a beach in the Caribbean, hopefully finding an outlet for his rage. That was an epic burn.
Oh, so you read that?
That was an
I just slipped that in there.
That actually was an epic burn.
That was a sunburn.
Yeah, that
Hey-o.
Was good.
All right. And while you were gone, I don't know if you know, Kenny boy, a trade did happen. In the NHL, it was kind of a hockey trade.
It was a hockey trade.
It was. Sammy Vatanen goes to the Anaheim Ducks with a conditional third rounder in 2019 or 2020 for Adam Henrique, Joseph Blandisi, and a 2018 third rounder. I'm just curious who you guys think won this trade. I got mixed feelings, but I'll let you guys talk first.
It was an interesting trade because it's for two players when... You think of Sammy Vatanen and you think of Adam Henrique and you think they're pretty good players.
Yeah.
And then you look and they're okay players. They're good players. They're good. They're both good, serviceable, decent players. I mean, Henrique obviously has scored some big goals for the Devils in their run to the final. And Vatanen's been, you know, very, very good. A part of a very, very good defensive group. A very good defenseman who's been part of a good defensive group in Anaheim. Both those players find me wanting a little bit more. Like, I keep thinking they've got more to give, and maybe now that they're in a new environment, maybe they will. I'd have to say probably the Devils win the trade, just because I think an impact defenseman is, you know, can have a bigger impact than a forward. And I just think what he's going to bring to that team, I mean, it's interesting. I don't think that before the season Ray Shiro would have ever envisioned making this trade. I think this trade was brought on by the fact that the Devils are going, okay, we're obviously way better than everyone thought that we were, including probably us.
Mm-hmm.
And we got something here. We might be able to make a bit of a run. We got to shore up our D, and this is how we did it. So I think when you frame it that way, I think the Devils come out ahead.
Yeah, I liked the trade. I too thought it was pretty even, but I give the edge to New Jersey because with Vatanen, you know, that New Jersey back end really needed a puck mover, and they've been they've been very good so far, but I think he can really help. And even if he isn't, you know, like a 26 minute a night guy or anything like that, he doesn't have to be, but I think the way that he can move the puck up the ice, you think about the speedsters they have in New Jersey, guys like Taylor Hall, and, you know, Nico Hischier's pretty quick as well. I think it's just going to make that offense even better, and it's already been a lot of fun to watch so far. And with the Ducks, I do like the trade for them, but it was coming more from a position of weakness where so many of their top-end forwards are hurt right now, that they just needed to, like, stanch the bleeding. Yeah.
You were champing at the bit to say
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I'm a staunch believer in stanching the bleeding. And true story. So for them, it's like, man, we really need a top six forward. And Adam Henrique, you know, he's got a pretty decent contract. Both of these guys are signed beyond this season, which I think is kind of nice for both teams involved here. But once you do get back the Getzlaffs and the Kesslers and even the Raquels and the Silverbergs, what you have in Henrik is a guy that can play the wing if you need him to, can play center if you need him to, and can give you some very nice depth. I'm not sure if Anaheim is too far gone to get back in the hunt this year, but next year, you know, he makes them a little bit younger because now with him under contract, I think he's 27 right now. You look at Antoine Vermette, you look at Andrew Cogliano, these guys are coming off the books. They could walk for nothing as UFAs. They're both older than Henrik. All of a sudden, you got a little more flexibility if you're Bob Murray, and I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with both you guys for different reasons. I think I like the trade more for the Devils, but I see why Bob Murray did it. I think it's the smart trade for now. But I was kind of disappointed in the trade from the Ducks' perspective because of that short-sightedness. To me, I kind of like the idea of this being a lost season for them and then them finishing with a pretty high draft pick, being able to reload, and then actually bring in a guy who could be NHL-ready, maybe a star-scoring forward next year. But they're still clearly trying to stay in the playoff race when I don't know if it's going to be their year. And Adam Henrik, yes, he plugs a hole, absolutely. He's very versatile. He can kill penalties. But he's I don't want to say just a guy. That's a little too far, but yeah, we know who he is.
Yeah.
He's a 20-goal, 50-point kind of guy. That's his ceiling.
At the top end.
Right,
yeah.
And Sammy Vatanen has some leftover ceiling to reach, I think, as a puck-moving defenseman in the right situation. And it's not that I think Murray was wrong to trade Vatanen. I just think I would have liked the Ducks to have shopped Vatanen for more of a longer-term piece. That's why I think I said on the podcast, Alex Galchenyuk, a guy with upside, whereas Henrik has high floor but a low ceiling.
Are we liking some of these trades that Ray Sherrill is making as a GM of the New Jersey Devils? I mean, the Taylor Hall trade. I know that Edmonton was great last year, and I know that Adam Larson was great, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If I can get Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, I'm making that trade.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
100 days out of 100.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Johansson trade, I know he's been hurt, but that was a good trade. He's made some pretty deaf deals.
Bit of a winning culture starting to get brought in there, I think.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Another team winning a lot. Speaking of winning culture, the Winnipeg Jets, all of a sudden, every time you look in the standings, it seems like they've jumped three spots, and now they're right up there with Tampa Bay and St. Louis, very best teams in the league. Are we believing the Jets? We've talked about them on the podcast a couple other times. Of course, in relation to our 2019 Stanley Cup pick, it's looking better and better.
Well, let's hope they don't...
they might do it this year early.
Yeah, we're conservative.
Wow.
Conservative.
And is that the thing? Are you guys starting to believe now? Like, is this team for real? Is this team hot? What do you think?
Well, what's the old saying? Your record is, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
And their record says that they're the second best team. Well, tied. Well, no, I guess they've played one fewer game than the Lightning. So they're technically the second best team in the NHL right now. I mean, it's really hard to not be a believer in this group.
Sure.
You know, it really is. Like, I mean, wow, you've got a top line of Shifley, Wheeler, and
It's been Kyle Connor.
Yeah, Kyle Connor. And then the second line is Ehlers, Little, and Laine. Like, I guess Perreault's been playing on the top line for
he's
the last
now,
little bit.
He's moving up now, to replace
for the
Connor,
last little bit. But, you know, what I find interesting is, you know, I mean, they can score, like, all get out, right? Their power play is ridiculous. But what I find interesting is we don't hear anything about Dustin Byfuglien anymore. You know what I mean? Like, he's got zero goals.
Yeah, he's having
this
year. A quiet year.
He's got zero goals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And they're doing it getting no goals from Dustin Byfuglien.
Mm-hmm.
And like, really, who are we hearing about on that blue line all the time right now? Jacob Trouba. And
Jacob Trouba and
Tyler Myers.
Yeah,
you know
Tyler Myers is on pace to have his best goal total ever.
Yeah,
and he won the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Trouba. You know, I mean, it's almost ancient history now that he wanted out of there.
Mm.
Like really, if it was genuine that he wanted a bigger role and he just wanted a place where he could play and everything, really there should be no reason for him to leave now. He's getting 21 minutes a game. I think only Bufflin, the aforementioned Bufflin's the only guy that's getting more ice time than him. But I think it's interesting. I mean, there's guys that are coming up and playing really well that I think, we have kind of waited for this to happen, and now it's starting to happen. And, and then, of course, the great equalizer, right? The great equalizer. Great equalizer. Yep. They're getting it now, and they weren't getting it before. And that makes bad teams look better. It makes good teams look better. It makes good teams look bad when it's not good. That's all obviously a huge, huge part of the equation. And, are they for real? Do we believe in them? Well, if you go by the old axiom about, U.S. Thanksgiving, well, we're a week removed from U.S. Thanksgiving, and Winnipeg Jets are at the top of the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say, aforementioned Bufflin, really good band name.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, okay. We're aforementioned Bufflin.
All right. My only question right now, and it only pertains to the postseason, because I think Winnipeg is probably going to hover around where they are for the rest of the regular season, is how is Connor Hellebuck in the playoffs? If he continues his stellar play into the postseason, then yeah, you're looking at a team that will probably be one of the favorites in the West. If he should falter, then obviously that's a bit of a flaw in the plan. And really, we have to wait and see if
if he plays this way, he's earned the chance.
Totally.
And I mean, I guess we have the World Championship from a couple of years ago as kind of the petri dish here, in which he was great.
Yep.
So
and every goalie's got to start somewhere.
Every goalie has to have his first playoff. He was in big games there, and he played very, very well for them. He won them a bronze medal, and he was probably one of the major reasons why they won it. So
yeah. So going off that, I mean, like I said, that's really my only question, because you can basically just toss out discussion points and the Jets tick off all the boxes. We already talked about their offensive depth. We've already talked about their blue line and how deep they are right there. Special teams, the power play is great. They're getting goaltending, so there's really nothing else that you can question at this point.
Yeah, I mean, point to a flaw, and I know what you're going to say.
Well,
I
know you think you know, but I'm going to surprise you.
Okay.
Okay, so what I have been saying is that analytics were not favoring the Jets all year. They were at the bottom of the barrel in Corsi, but they've actually really improved over the last couple of weeks. Now they're all the way up to the middle of the pack, which kind of makes sense. We saw the talent that they had on their roster, and there was just too much raw ability for them to keep playing that way and keep failing to generate chances. Yeah. So I think it's actually a believable regression to the mean, positive regression, Kenny boy, that we're seeing. So I'm actually now more of a believer.
Call me Kenny boy.
Why not? I like Kenny boy. Hey, Kenny boy. So I believe it a lot more now than I did even 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I think one of the telltale signs was, even though they were getting outchanced a lot, as of late October, their high danger scoring chances were really low. So they weren't allowing high quality chances. They were just allowing a lot of chances. And I know Ottawa under Guy Boucher has played that way a lot as well. So I don't know. I believe now.
They're big on puck retrieval too. Like they're really, they may give it up at the blue line, which might have an effect on possession stats, but their puck retrieval in deep is really, really good.
Mm. They get pucks deep and they go get them.
Get pucks deep and go get them, yeah. Sound like I'm in between periods interview. Yeah, I gotta get pucks deep. Gotta work hard. Get some bounces.
On the flip side of the teams that are struggling, I mean, we've talked about the coach's hot seat a few times recently on the podcast, but I think right now, obviously, Philadelphia, we got to talk about them. 10 games in a row. Dave Haxtell, I know he inherited a rebuilding situation, but when you lose 10 in a row, I think no matter who you are and what your situation is, I think the GM's got to take notice and at least think about it. And then we also have Todd McClellan in Edmonton, who every time it seems like the Oilers show a sign of getting back on track, they do something disappointing, or Chris Russell fires a gorgeous shot into his own net. So I guess we'll start with Haxtell. Do you think, is he done in Philadelphia? Is there any merit to Philadelphia trying to save this thing mid-season, or is it a lost year?
No, I think it's a lost year. Yeah. Is he done in Philadelphia? Well, he's in the midst of a 10-game losing streak right now. And not only that, they had a 10-game losing streak last year. Has any guy ever had two 10-game losing streaks and kept his job? I Maybe.
Like excluding like, you know, like the 92, 93
yeah,
Sharks.
George and, Kingston yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rick Bonus probably.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But it's really hard to really kind of make a case for him, isn't it? I mean he's had some time. He's had some time. And he's got some good players. I mean, you know, they've got some top shelf players at all positions except for goal.
Yeah.
And again, we go back to a bad goalie can make a coach look really, 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 really bad. And I think that's part of it too. But I don't think anybody would be I don't know if it's all his fault or how much of it is his fault or how much of it is his doing, but I don't think that anybody would be rushing to, you know, make the case for Dave Haxtell if they decided to fire him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I would like to see is for Haxtell to finish out the season and then GM Ron Hextall makes the tweaks he can make. Obviously, goaltending needs to be shored up. The irony of this is that Philadelphia has some really good depth in their prospect pipeline when it comes to netminders.
Yeah, starting with Carter Hart.
Felix Sandstrom, Kirill Ustamenko is playing really well in Russia. You know,
Tomac.
Like, they're actually incredibly deep back there. But you do have to wait longer for goaltenders. And I don't even think any of those kids will be ready next year. You got to give them at least, you know, like Carter Hart, you got to have him play pro first.
Right.
So you're
still stopgapping for it.
You're stopgapping another
maybe
year.
Maybe two.
Exactly.
Two.
Yeah. So obviously you need a better stopgap than you have right now in Neuwirth and Brian Elliott. But I would still like to see Haxtell start next season. And if he gets off to a bad start, then yeah.
Maybe they should sign this Juuso Kopra kid from Finland, Junior B. Stopped 100 shots. Lost 5-0. Stopped 100 shots.
Wow. He must have been pissed.
He's like 16.
Come on, you guys. Yeah. Jeez.
I think because Haxtell came in, you know, you got to put your stamp on a team. Sometimes it takes a while. We're seeing it with Phil Housley in Buffalo, obviously. And I think we're going to get to that probably later with some reader questions. But I'd like to see him get like the full 2 years, and then, you know, you bring in another goaltender, and if it still doesn't work, then, yeah, you go, you know, quick leash on that one. You get somebody else and try. Because you're right. I mean, they have some really good young players. Next year, you're looking at, you know, Nolan Patrick, Ivan Provorov, Shane Gostisbehere, several other young defensemen that are very good, Travis Konechny up front, like, they should be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, if goaltending's not the only problem, then yeah, you take,
what's
you get rid of the coach.
What's this with Haxtell saying, I'm okay with the way we've played.
Yeah, he said, we've been pretty good.
Yeah.
After loss 9, he said, we've been pretty good during those 9 games. So because of that, like, I'm skeptical that we're going to see anything happen. I don't think it seems to matter how many games in a row they lose. To me, Ron Hextall, he's kind of like the groundhog of general managers. He's been very conservative
since
he took the job.
Here we go.
Here comes an analogy.
Okay, here we go. Yeah. Okay.
He stays in his hole. He stockpiles draft picks or nuts and fruit, you know, if you're the actual groundhog. He has the most players in the World Juniors last year. The Flyers had 9 guys in the World Juniors. Very few trades. He comes out once. He trades Braden Shen. He sees his shadow. The trade bowls up in his face. He runs back in the hole. And now he's saying that his team that's lost 9 or 10 games in a row is playing well. Like, okay, Ron, whatever you say, buddy.
So
whatever
does this
you
mean
say.
We only have 6 more weeks of Yuri Lehterä?
Yeah. Oh, nice. Nice.
Noise. Noise. My kid says that all the time, and he texts it, N-O-I-C-E. Noise. So that's why I say it.
That's good. Going north to Edmonton, what about Todd McLellan? I mean, I know the Oilers, they seem to be showing signs of life. I mean, they haven't been awful of late, but
back.
Yeah, and losing Cam Talbot obviously hurts. They seem that they're getting into some, well, I think so.
On paper.
Yeah. And they just can't seem to avoid track meets right now. I don't know. What do you think? Is it a coaching problem?
The thing is, as fast as some of their players are, they don't do great in track meets.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem.
One of their players.
Yeah, yeah. One of their players.
One of their players is
fast. And I think I think this team has some fundamental flaws in the way it's been constructed. I really do. I think that, you know, they've built it to be a team that would have been good a couple of years ago, one of those big, heavy Western Conference blah-bitty-blah teams, right? Mm-hmm. And now they've got their best player is a go-go-go-go-go-go-go, and he's going, and he's looking around, and he's like, where is everybody, right? So I think there's some real fundamental flaws in the way this team's been constructed, and that's not on the coach, that's on the GM, in my opinion. How do I put this? One thing that I really worry about with Todd McClellan, I think he's a really good coach. I don't like how he talks about his players sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he came to Chris Russell's defense, and that was all well and good. But if you notice after losses sometimes, he kind of tosses his boys, you know, under the proverbial bus a lot. Yeah. And that concerns me a little bit.
Bit of a finger pointer, if
yeah,
you will?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. And that would concern me. But I think he is a very, very good coach. And I think if he were unemployed, he wouldn't be unemployed for long. Yeah. And I don't think he's going to be unemployed.
But I do enjoy Todd McClellan post-game pressers.
They're nice.
For whatever reason, Canadian coaches tend to be, like, my favorites. Like, Glenn Gulletson in Calgary. Like, yeah, when things go wrong in Calgary, and obviously, you know, the Flames are decent this year, but like when something happens,
they're only decent though, they're not,
they are only decent. But when something happens, I love to see Gulletson's reactions because he's got great reactions, yeah. And Paul Maurice can be that way too.
But I find Gulletson, like when he says it, he does slam his team, but he doesn't do it sort of as personally and pointedly at sometimes,
right,
I think, you know. And the old, you know, it's on us because we didn't prepare them, like it's almost like saying, well, it's not really on us, you know. We tried to prepare the guys and they just didn't show up for the first 20 minutes of the game,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah.
So anyways, yeah, but I think this team is fundamentally flawed. I don't think this roster is near as good as we thought it was. I thought these guys were going to contend for a cup.
I thought
they were going to contend for a cup, maybe even win it.
Well, we had them
maybe
going to the final. Our consensus prediction
was
Edmonton going to the final, losing to Pittsburgh.
Right. And they're going to the final of the NIT this year.
Yeah. I could see McClellan getting fired if that's Chiarelli's kind of last card. Because I agree with you about the structure and looking how things have gone down with their defense core, how things have gone down with their right wingers.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is you know, a personnel thing, but if Chiarelli thinks that he needs to save himself, then point to McClellan and be like, well, you know, we had a roster that should be contending. Look at what the Hockey News said about us in the preseason.
But yeah, I mean, if you look at the whole sort of dynamics of the situation, it would point more towards McClellan getting fired, right?
Totally.
Because the GM has built the roster and the GM has say over whether or not the coach continues coaching.
Yeah, that's the progression. I can't think off the top of my head of an example where the GM got fired. Like in a certain regime, GM first and the coach stays.
Yeah.
It's usually the reverse.
Yeah,
that's right. Got time for some reader questions now. We'll start with Mike. Could be Shailen, could be Scullin. You tell us, Mike.
How's he supposed to tell us?
I don't know. He'll call.
What's he going to do, right?
Just call us.
Type back his name.
Yeah,
it's called SEH.
Type
like,
it out phonetically.
For only $50 on the podcast, you can tell us how to
send it to the Hockey News. Cash.
Care of Ken Campbell.
Preferably American funds if you're in the U.S.
Nice call.
And we'll just take care of that.
All right. Anyway. Mike S. says, which new coach has had the greatest impact on their
Travis
team so
Green.
Far this year? Which coaching change has moved the needle least? Ooh, it's a double question. Double trouble, Mike.
Double question.
Well, I think the best is Travis Green, in my opinion. I mean, he has made a team that's very, very, very mediocre, and they are competitive most nights. I think what he's done with the Sedins has been brilliant.
Yep.
He got them to buy into, and I mean, you are dealing with the Sedins here. Like, there is a Swedish asshole somewhere in the world. Like, there is a guy out there who's a Swedish D-bag.
Right.
We haven't found him
yet. I haven't found him yet.
Yeah. He only exists in, like, a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, or he lives somewhere in, you know, like, Lulia or somewhere. Like, and he's just, and he's just like, such a D-bag that no one can stand him and stuff. And, like, so he just walks around muttering things. But anyways, there is that guy in Sweden somewhere. I haven't found him. Yeah. Anyway, so you're dealing with the Sedins. You're dealing with two guys who get it, who are classy, and say, yes, for the good of the team, we're going to take a lesser role. This is going to become Brock Besser's team. This is going to become Bo Horvat's team. This is going to become Chris Tanev's team. This is going to become, you know, like, so I think what he's done there and the culture that he's brought in and said, look, I know that this is a building situation, but I want to win games, and I'm going to coach the game the way I think we have the best chance of winning. And I think that's been amazing for Vancouver. Mm. Are we going around the horn with the best?
Yeah,
and then
let's
they
go around the horn with the best.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Caveat is, you know, Gerard Gallant, technically he's not a new coach because the team didn't exist before.
Yeah,
but
he
is
a new coach in that he wasn't working last year.
He wasn't working, so shout out to Gerard Gallant. But I'm going to go in a different direction just to get a couple more names out there. Doug Waite with the New York Islanders. I think the big thing there is guys are earning roles, and I'm not sure that happened in the past with Jack Capuano. Patient zero being Matt Barzal, who is all of a sudden contending for the Calder Trophy, playing very well, showing off some Tavares-esque moves in the offensive zone, being that playmaker we always thought he could be. Did he need a little extra time, or was just... You know, is Waite putting him in a better situation? I'm not sure, but, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, when I look at what the Islanders have been able to accomplish already this season, I think Waite has done a very nice job pushing the right buttons and putting guys in a position to succeed.
I just look at him and I, like, think, smart, 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 smart.
Just like he played.
Smart player, smart coach, smart guy. Yeah. Like, he just seems to be the kind of guy that really thinks things through and has a really good handle on... You know, who can help him and all those sorts of things. I think he's done a really good job. I agree.
Yeah, and from what I've been told, you know, right from the onset, he wanted to cultivate relationships with guys, particularly John Tavares. And I think that's very strong, because when you have a guy like Tavares who's so entrenched in that market, you want to make sure that you're on the same page as him. And I think Waite has done that, and obviously... It's been to the benefit of everybody.
Well, the thing I find now is the big deal with coaches now is fly into where the guy lives in the summer.
Right.
So every coach now flies in, and, you know, I mean, they did it with Taylor Hall in New Jersey. They've done it with all these other guys. Like, the big thing now is to you come over the summer, take him over dinner, a dinner the last 5 hours, and talk everything out, and then the guy's great.
Yeah, right. Forge a relationship. I'll throw out a third name, John Stevens in LA. And even though the Kings, they dipped a little bit, but we've seen them, they've had bookends of a great season.
Amazing
lately. Great start, and they've been great again lately. Yeah. And I'll give credit to Drew Doughty. When I talked to him in the summer, he said, Stevens is a much more approachable coach. He's going to open up the game. We're going to play faster, even though people think we're slow. We're going to play differently. We're going to play fast. And when Dustin Brown is getting as many points as he's getting, But when Dustin Brown can be unlocked like that, I think you got to look at coaching. Yeah. And obviously, Kopitar has regained his touch. And I think this team plays a bit looser than it did under Daryl Sutter.
Yeah.
Willing to take more chances, especially knowing you have a guy like Drew Doughty back there.
And Jonathan
chances.
Quick.
And Jonathan Quick,
who
playing
like,
fantastically well.
Yeah, and is spectacular. Like, he's spectacular, right? Like,
he
makes spectacular
saves.
Well,
he's the most athletic goaltender in the NHL, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Stevens, I guess, would probably be my pick. I'm still wondering if the offense can stay all season long with the type of guys they have, but we'll see. On the flip side of the new coaches, who do you think has had the smallest impact, I guess would be the word?
Well, or negative impact, even?
Negative,
I guess, to be fair, Phil Housley hasn't had a negative impact. They were terrible before, and they're still terrible. Mm. The thing with Phil Housley is I've watched the Sabres play a couple of times. It's shocking the lack of structure in their game. Like, it's shocking. It really is. And I would have thought, you know, like, I mean, he was very good with the World Junior team. He seemed to be one of those guys that, you know, made the progression. He was with Nashville, a team that was very structured. You know, their defense was amazing and has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't been able to get... And now, like, it's like they went, like, 230 minutes without a goal, and now they're talking about, like, oh, we got one, you know, oh, geez, great, you know, so, like, that's the big triumph now in Buffalo is they got a goal tonight, you know? So, I would have to say Housley. He hasn't made them that much worse. They're probably as bad now as they were last year, but I mean, Ryan O'Reilly, that's Jack Eichel, like these guys are not producing for this guy.
Mm. And to me, we've done the research before, and normally a new coach, there is a temporary bump.
Yeah.
And so to me, no progress is the equivalent of going backward when it comes to a new coach. And
right.
You've seen the post-game interviews, this team is just defeated. They're talking like a team that's been with the same coach through the dog days of a couple seasons.
Mm.
So I'm starting to wonder, I mean, it's not like Housley has a ton of talent to work with, especially on the back end. But is it possible he's just one of those guys that doesn't necessarily have it? I mean, we saw that with Denny Savard in Chicago.
He hasn't proven that he does to this point. He may have it, but he hasn't proven that he does. And a GM once told me that the biggest move, the biggest impact a GM has on his organization is the coach he hires.
Mm-hmm.
And given that, you got to wonder.
Yeah, I think Hasley's got to be the answer there. Also, I mean, Florida with Bob Bugner, they haven't been much better than they were last year either. But this is a tough question for me because it hasn't even been a full season for these guys. And, you know, as I was saying before, like with Hextall, like you got to get the structure in there. And I look at Jared Bednar in Colorado, and they were historically bad last year. And
now they're just crappy.
Now they're just kind of mediocre. They were good for a while, and it felt like things were turning around, and then it's kind of petered out there. But I think what Bednar has shown this year is that he's not as bad a coach as the record indicated last season.
Mm-hmm.
So for Housley and Bugner in particular, I think you got to give them the full year. And then again, like you evaluate next year where all your players know you and they know what's expected. I think there's still a feeling out process. But that's the question. So that's my answer.
Fair. Time for one more quickly. This is from Johnny Mortensen. When the new expansion team is going to draft, will there be different rules for Vegas than the rest of the league's teams?
Oh, I thought that question meant, is there going to be different rules than Vegas had? But you're going to say, like, so that they won't be able to poach Vegas's roster? Is that the question?
That is the question. And when I first read it, I thought it was regarding that team as well. But we can still answer it.
Sure.
I think Vegas will be subjected to the same rules.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind they will be. Absolutely no doubt in my mind. They won't get any free passes or extra, you know, because, I mean, you can't do that, right?
Yeah.
And I think as far as the expansion rules are concerned, they'll probably stay pretty well the same. Because whoever's coming in is paying probably more than $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Vegas situation was unique in as much as they paid so much more than other teams. And I went through it. Even in those days' dollars, like when Minnesota and Columbus came in, I think their expansion fee was it 60? Is that what that's the equivalent of about $200 million now. It's not even close. Like they paid so much that they deserve to get the favorable expansion draft situation that they had. And I can't imagine, like, if you're Houston or Seattle or whoever it is that's coming in next, you know, what? We paid $563 million for this team and we're not going to get the same shake that they got, it just wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, and let's also keep in mind that there probably won't be an expansion draft for at least like 3-4 seasons.
I don't know if it's going to
maybe
go that
two
long.
Or three.
It could be a couple. Yeah.
So Vegas is going to be a lot more entrenched than they are now, and obviously they're just starting to re-sign their first players, guys like Braden McNabb. The only stipulation is that whoever comes in is going to demand William Carlson.
Right.
We have to have that guy. We're not paying the fee unless we get William Carlson.
Yeah, that's right.
I think to me, like, the fact that Vegas is doing so well, I think the NHL couldn't be happier, and you could argue that the whole format was sort of rigged for if George McPhee wanted to build a winner, to build a winner.
Right.
And I think now the Golden Knights are almost walking advertisement to whoever wants to pay the fee. Look how quickly you can build an awesome team.
You can win
the division.
Exactly. I think that's all the time we have today. I just want to give a parting shout out to the best question of the week from someone or something called Fork Allingbird. And the question was, in the old Superman TV show, how come when people shot at him, the bullets bounced off his chest, but if they threw their guns at him, he ducked?
I don't know. I have no idea. But my question is The guy didn't wear a mask. How did nobody know it was Clark Kent? Like, that's what I don't get. He just combed his hair different. That was it.
Yeah.
It's the same as that Masters of the Universe guy.
He-Man.
Yeah, or He-Man. Yeah. He's never there. Never there. Never there when they're fighting. But some guy who looks exactly like him is. And then afterwards he shows up and they all go, "Where the hell were you?" And he's like, if I was that guy, to be like, "Are you guys out of your... Are you stupid?" Like, seriously. Like, come on. Yeah. Put it together.
That's right.
Anyways, that's my... That's my
worst disguise ever. All right. Thank you, Forked Owling Birds. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.